Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for this introduction to Shakespeare's As You Like It. You'll be reading As You Like It this week, and I hope that by spending a few minutes with me ahead of time, you can enjoy this play more. This play was probably written and then performed in 1599, and so we are in about the middle of Shakespeare's career, and we are coming down to the very end of Queen Elizabeth's reign and lifetime, which ended in 1603. This play is a comedy. It's a short play. There are only 2,600 lines. I mentioned to you this morning that Hamlet in his play has 4,000 lines himself. The entire play for As You Like It has 2,600 lines. It's a much shorter play. It does have fewer rhyming lines. It has multiple scenes. It has 22 scenes. There are 17 men in this play and only 4 women. However, one of them is dressed as a man. The most lines are spoken by Rosalind. Next after that is Orlando, and then Touchstone. If you're going to be reading this play aloud in a group, the character with the most lines is Rosalind, and next Orlando, and then Touchstone. This is a pastoral poem. A pastoral poem treats of things that have to do with shepherds and the rustic life, country life. The Latin word for shepherd is pastor. And so pastoral, a pastoral poem has something to do with shepherds and that rustic life. It will have something to do with country life. It has a rural setting. It's not royal. It has a rural setting. This tends to have something that is pastoral, tends to have a simple, a more serene setting and style, and more idyllic. Idyllic. The people that are living in the woods here at Arden are living a too good to be true life. They live almost like Robin Hood and his merry men in the forest, and we don't hear too much discussion as far as what do they do in the winter, how do they have clean water, how do they get fresh fruit and vegetable, how do they catch meat, how do they prepare it, things like that. We don't hear any of those realistic elements. In this story, we hear only the idyllic elements in this pastoral poem. When we open the play in Act 1, Scene 1, the first men out on the stage are Orlando. He's our hero, and as he comes onto the stage, all the young women sigh. Here comes Orlando, our idyllic hero, and the old man, Adam. Orlando opens up talking to Adam. The only way for us to know what Orlando is thinking is for him to say it aloud to Adam. So Orlando speaks aloud, and he tells Adam that he remembers when his father died, that he told his brother, he charged him to breed him well, to breed his little brother well. In other words, to take care of him. That would include things like an education, tutors, riding lessons, all types of things. Manners, all types of things, so that he could live according to his station in life. Apparently there is a third brother, Jacques Du Bois, and we don't hear about this brother further in the play. And so Orlando complains to Adam that he is treated worse than a horse, that he takes better care of horses than he does with him. Now the scene is set, and so onto the stage comes Oliver. And of course, now we're expecting some type of a fight, and this is what we're going to have. Adam looks up and says, "Yonder comes my master, your brother." Orlando says, "Go apart, Adam, and thou shalt hear how he will shake me up." So Adam goes and stands in the corner somewhere and hides around and peeks around to listen for himself to see what on earth will Oliver and Orlando say. So with Adam hidden, Oliver comes in and demands, "Now, sir, what make you here?" And Orlando, in a very sarcastic manner, says, "Nothing. I'm not taught to make anything." In other words, "You have not provided any schooling for me. What do you mean? What do I make? I don't know how to do anything." Oliver replies, "What mar you then, sir?" In other words, if you're not making something, what are you ruining? What are you marring? And Orlando, marry, sir, I'm helping you to mar that which God made, a poor unworthy brother of yours, with idleness. And so, obviously, Orlando's being sarcastic. Oliver replies, marry, sir, be better employed and be not a while. Orlando replies, shall I keep your hogs and eat husks with them? What prodigal portion have I spent that I should come to such penury? Here is one of the biblical allusions, and of course this is to the prodigal son. And Orlando is demanding of his older brother, have I been the prodigal and gone off and spent my inheritance that I've come to such penury? What have I done? Oliver, know you where you are, sir. So Oliver is trying to be a little bit uppity and demand some respect. Orlando replies, oh, sir, very well, here in your orchard. Oliver, know you before whom, sir? Oliver again looking for respect. Orlando, I, better than him I am before, knows me. I know you're my eldest brother, and in the gentle condition of blood you should so know me. The courtesy of nations allows you my better, and that you are the firstborn. But the same tradition takes not away my blood. Were there 20 brothers betwixt us, I have as much of my father in me as you, albeit, I confess, your coming before me is nearer to his reverence. What, boy? Says Oliver, and strikes him. Now we have a fist fight between the two brothers. Orlando, come, come, elder brother, you're too young in this. And Oliver replies, wilt thou lay hands on me, villain? Now remember, what has Orlando been doing? Orlando, I call him our Shakespearean heartthrob. Orlando has been teaching himself. He has been helping in the stables. He's been doing all types of work. He probably is a muscular, good-looking guy who looks like he doesn't mind hard work. He is our Shakespearean heartthrob. So Orlando replies, I'm no villain. I am the youngest son of Sir Roland de Boys. He was my father, and he is thrice a villain that says such a father begot villains. Wert thou not my brother, I would not take this hand from thy throat. Where is Orlando's hand? It is on Oliver's throat. I would not take this hand from thy throat till this other had pulled out thy tongue for saying so. Thou hast railed on thyself. And now poor Adam, the elderly servant of Sir de Boys, of Sir Roland de Boys, comes out and tries to break them up. And Oliver is not very kind to Adam. And so Oliver will say, near the end of this, just a few lines down, I guess, Oliver will say, go you with him, you old dog. And that is what Oliver calls the family's old servant, Adam, who served their father and now serves these boys. Now, obviously, the audience is turned completely away from Oliver. We realize he's the evil, cruel older brother, and we are all rooting for Orlando, our Shakespearean heartthrob. In comes an announcer, Dennis, to tell us that there is a wrestler here to see Oliver. And the wrestler, who is a very simple-minded man named Charles, comes in. Charles is coming to tell Oliver that Oliver's little brother, Orlando, has challenged him in a wrestling match, and that he doesn't throw fights. If he challenges him, he'll end up getting hurt very severely. And Oliver, seeing this chance for his chance to get rid of his little brother, Orlando, tells Charles, oh my goodness, I wouldn't tell you not to hit him. If he couldn't win you fair and square, he would probably poison you. And Charles, being very simple-minded, believes everything that tells him, believes when Oliver says that Orlando is the stubbornest young fellow of France, full of ambition, an envious emulator of every man's good parts, a secret and villainous contriver against me, his natural brother, and says, I would just as soon, I would as leaf, thou didst break his neck as his finger, and mentions that he would poison him if he could not win. And Charles, very simple-minded, I am heartily glad I came hither to you. If he can't come tomorrow, I'll give him his payment. If ever he go alone again, I'll never wrestle for prize more. And so, God keep your worship. All right, Oliver has set his plan in motion. Poor Orlando is going to fight Charles the Wrestler the next day because he's looking to earn fame and fortune for himself, since his brother will not provide for his needs. Oliver saw this as an opportunity to get rid of Orlando by portraying Orlando as thieving, conniving, cheating, even a poisoner. Act 1, Scene 2. In come the ladies. And if you were looking at the whiteboard today, you know that Duke Senior is the father of Rosalind, and Duke Frederick the Evil is the father of Celia. The girls live together as cousins, call each other sweet cuz. Celia is trying in this scene to cheer up Rosalind, but she cannot because Rosalind is mourning the loss of her father. Her father, Duke Senior, is off hiding in the Forest of Arden. And Celia is telling her things like, if I didn't have a father, if you didn't have a father, I'll share mine with you. Take my father. Then in comes Touchstone, the clown. Touchstone is a famous clown. Touchstone is one of the best clowns that Shakespeare wrote. Everybody loves to play Touchstone. The clown gets to say things that normal people would be imprisoned or executed or exiled for. The clown can come in, see things as they are, and say them plainly, and get away with it and live to tell. So, Touchstone comes in to tease the girls, and Touchstone, near the end of this scene, we see a note that says, "Enter le beau." This means the pretty. Enter the pretty. Enter le beau. Le beau comes in and announces to the ladies and to Touchstone that they better move because a fight is coming to take place very near where they're at. And if they don't want to see it, they better leave if they don't want to see wrestling. And of course, this is the next day. This is the wrestling match. And here come the wrestlers. And the ladies decide that they are going to stay. So we have a flourish. Do, 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 do. Enter Duke Frederick. This is the evil Duke Frederick, Celia's father. Different lords, Orlando, he is our Shakespearean heartthrob. Charles, this is the wrestler, and their attendants. And the Duke says, well, let them fight, if he will not pay attention to his own peril. Rosalind looks over and says, is yonder the man? And here we have the Shakespearean boing. And this is where Rosalind and Orlando fall in love immediately. Or Rosalind falls in love with Orlando anyway. And so they're looking at them, and they watch the fight. And Celia will say to Orlando, young gentleman, your spirits are too bold for your years. You have seen cruel proof of this man's strength. If you saw yourself with your eyes or knew yourself with your judgment, the fear of your adventure would counsel you to a more equal enterprise. We pray you for your own sake to embrace your own safety and give over this attempt. So the girls try to talk Orlando out of this fight, and he cannot be talked out of the fight. Now, despite terrible odds, Charles the Wrestler has already severely injured a couple of young men. Despite terrible odds, Orlando wins the wrestling match, and he is applauded by Rosalind and Celia. Rosalind falls instantly in love with Orlando. However, when Duke Frederick, who is applauding, learns that Orlando is the son of Sir Roland Boys, who once was a friend to Duke Senior, and Duke Frederick has exiled Duke Senior, he orders him away. So, Duke Frederick the Evil enjoyed watching Orlando win, thought it was wonderfully won against the odds, until he found out whose son he was. Because he's the son of Sir Roland de Bois, who was a friend of Duke Senior, and he's exiled Duke Senior to the Forest of Arden. So he orders Orlando away. Soon after, Duke Frederick goes home. He banishes Rosalind from the court as well. And Duke Frederick's niece Rosalind and his daughter Celia, who have lived as inseparable sisters, are now faced with what to do. Rosalind is told in a very common Shakespearean way she must leave. She has to leave within 24 hours. If she's still there in a day, she'll be executed. And so, of course, it has to be severe so that the girls, something has to be done. What can Rosalind do? Where on earth can she go? Where should she run to? Well, where is her father? In the Forest of Rosalind. So Rosalind announces her intention to leave, to go hide in the Forest of Arden. And Celia says she will not leave her. She'll go with her. So the two girls get dressed up As I mentioned, Rosalind decides to dress as a man so they can go safely. One young girl with a young man could safely travel alone and go to the forest and travel there. In fact, they're going to live this way as a young girl and her brother. And Rosalind is going to call herself Ganymede. And they decide to join her father in the Forest of Arden. This is a very typical Shakespearean ploy, and this is what makes it possible for the two young girls to travel alone. Act 2. In Act 2, we have Duke Senior and his men. They're celebrating the simple life of the forest in a song. Their contented existence is very reminiscent of Robin Hood. I mentioned earlier, we only see the positive things. We only see an idyllic pastoral life. They're very contented. We do not see the problems of not having any plumbing, of not having fresh fruits and vegetables, how to catch your meat, what do you do when it rains, what do you do in the winter, how do you take care of your clothing and shoes and things like that that wear out. We don't see any realistic elements. This is a comedy, it's a romance. We see only an idyllic existence. And so these men are living very happily in the forest in a way reminiscent of Robin Hood. Rosalind is wearing male clothing. She arrives at the forest with Celia and with the court jester Touchstone, who they have convinced to come with them. They purchase a cottage and they live together as brother and sister. Very convenient. Someone had a cottage for sale and the girls had some jewels to trade in. Having been forced to flee for his life, guess who also arrives in the forest? Adam will tell Orlando when he tries to come home, you must leave. Oliver's going to have you killed. You can't even come into the house. And poor Orlando says, what should I do? I don't have any money. Adam will say, I've been saving as I worked for your father for many years. I will come with you and we'll have my one bag of money. And so Orlando and his very faithful servant, Adam, join this band that are assembled around the banished Duke. They also are going to the Forest of Arden. Notice that all of the good people are going to the Forest of Arden. And of course, the fun, the comedy, is what happens when they bump into one another and how they deceive one another. And of course, it's very convenient that they also took Touchstone, the clown, to the forest, who has a very courtly manner and will have a lot of fun with the country bumpkins. In Act 3, Rosalind discovers that Orlando is in the forest. Oh my, Orlando's in the forest. He's going from tree to tree and he's hanging bad verses, declaring his love for Rosalind from the trees. He's writing poetry. The problem is that he can't write poetry. Nothing rhymes, and the words that do rhyme are ill rhymes. Not very good rhymes, and he's going around hanging these on all the trees, declaring his love for Rosalind. Of course, she's absolutely thrilled that he loves her in return, and yet she is devastated for him to come and find her and meet her there because she is dressed like a man. She's dressed like a man. She can't reveal it to anyone. It would be completely inappropriate for anyone to know two girls were living there alone, and so she must continue her disguise. So, since she's disguised as a boy called Ganymede, she decides to test Orlando by inviting him to practice making his love declarations to her. And so, Rosalind, dressed as Ganymede, is going to convince Orlando that she can cure him of his love sickness. She can cure him. If he will just come and see her every day, she will pretend that she is Rosalind. And of course she is. And he'll practice his love declarations to her, and she's going to cure him of his love for Rosalind. The clown Touchstone makes cute comparisons between country life and city life. Very, very good comparisons. This is all in Act 3, and this is in Act 3, Scene 2. First, we're in the forest with Orlando hanging verses on a tree, and then we're introduced, we see Corin and Touchstone the clown come on the scene. And Corin is looking at Touchstone and says, "And how like you this shepherd's life, Master Touchstone?" In other words, Touchstone, you've come to live in the forest now. My, you wear unusual clothing, of course, a clown's clothing. What do you think of this country life? And Touchstone says, truly, shepherd, in respect of itself, it is a good life. But in respect that it is a shepherd's life, it is not. In respect that it is solitary, I like it very well. But in respect that it is private, it is a very vile life. Now, in respect it is in the fields, it pleaseth me well. But in respect it is not in the court, it is tedious. And it is a spare life, look you, it fits my humor well. But as there is no more plenty in it, it goes much against my stomach. Hast any philosophy in thee, shepherd? And Corin, who has no idea how to respond to this, because poor Corin has just listened to Touchstone trying to speak high and mighty, talking out of both sides of his mouth. And so Corin replies, no more, but that I know the more one sickens, the worse at ease he is, and that he that wants money means and content is without three, that he that wants money means and content is without three good things, that the property of rain is to wet and fire to burn, that good pasture makes fat sheep, and that a great cause of the night is lack of the sun, that he that hath learned no wit by nature nor art may complain of good breeding or comes of a very dull kindred. And Touchstone, of course, what Corin has just declared is that he enjoys a simple life. Touchstone replies, such a one is a natural philosopher. Wast ever in court, shepherd? And Corin replies, no, truly. Then thou art damned. Nay, I hope. Truly, thou art damned, like an ill-roasted egg, all on one side. For not being at court? Your reason. Why, if thou was never at court, thou never sawst good manners. If thou now never sawst good manners, then thy manners must be wicked. And wickedness is sin, and sin is damnation. Thou art in a parlous state, shepherd. And Corin replies, not a whit, Touchstone. Those that are good manners at the court are as ridiculous in the country as the behavior of the country is most mockable at the court. You told me you salute not at the court, but you kiss your hands. That courtesy would be uncleanly if courtiers were shepherds. So Touchstone has expressed, when you come upon a friend and you're at court, when you live at court, you take the other person's hand and you kiss it. And Corin is saying, no, good manners. What good manners are at court are not good manners in the country. If we kissed hands, it would be very uncleanly. So Touchstone says, instance, briefly, come, instance, give me an example. And Corin replies, why, we are still handling our ewes, our baby lambs, and their fells, you know, are greasy. So he's handling his sheep, and he's saying his hands would not be hands that you would want to kiss. Touchstone replies, why, do not your courtier's hands sweat? And is not the grease of a mutton as wholesome as the sweat of a man? Shallow, shallow, a better instance, I say, come. Give me a better example, that's not good enough. Corin says, besides, our hands are hard. And Touchstone, your lips will feel them the sooner. Shallow again, a more sounder instance, come, come. In other words, give me a better example. Corin replies, and they are often tarred over with the surgery of our sheep. And would you have us kiss tar? The courtier's hands are perfumed with civet. And so Corin is revealing one of the more baser elements of sheep herding, and that is when they are handling their lambs and talking about their surgery, they normally cut the tails off of sheep to help the sheep to be cleaner. And then they cover that over with tar. And so Corin is saying, would you have us kiss tar? The courtier's hands are perfumed with civet. In other words, with some type of perfume. And Touchstone will not accept this either. However, that's what this long discourse is. They're going back and forth which life is better. And Touchstone, of course, is sarcastically making fun of everything, trying to pull Corin farther and farther into his joke and out of sorts. Then in walks Rosalind reading one of the poems that Orlando has written to her. From the east to western end, no jewel is like Rosalind. Her worth being mounted on the wind, through all the world bears Rosalind. And she continues, and these are very poor rhymes together. She reads a few of these, and Touchstone makes fun of them and says, where'd you find them? And she says, on the trees. And he says, well, the tree yields bad fruit. Then in comes Celia, and she also has found a poem and can't believe it. Why should this a desert be? For it is unpeopled. No, tongues I'll hang on every tree. That shall civil thanes show. And on and on and on. And we have all of these references to Rosalind. And of course, Rosalind is very touched and thrilled. And Celia thinks that they are rather silly, and Touchstone thinks that they are ridiculous. And that is scene two. Then Celia tells Rosalind that Orlando is in the forest. And just before Orlando and Jacques come on the scene, Celia is trying to tell Rosalind all of the account of how she saw Orlando, what he was wearing, what he was doing, what is he doing in the forest. And Rosalind says at the end of this section of scene two, "Do you not know I'm a woman? When I think, I must speak. Sweet, say on." One of my favorite lines. Then in come Orlando and Jacques. And so now Orlando and Jacques have figured out that they don't like one another. And Orlando is now with Duke Sr. in the woods. He's already met Duke Sr., who is actually Rosalind's father, but she has not gone in and met him yet. And Orlando and Jacques don't like one another very well. Orlando has a great line. Jacques says, "God be with you. Let's meet as little as we can." And Orlando has a great line. He replies, "I do desire we may be better strangers." And so they don't enjoy one another. Jacques is the melancholy Jacques. He can't be happy no matter what. He doesn't even want to be happy. And this is where now Orlando declares that he's love-shaked, he's lovesick. Rosalind says she has the remedy, that her uncle was in love once. She's looking for the marks of love on him. He says, "How do you know when a man is love? What were his marks?" And she says, "Well, you have to have a lean cheek and a sunken eye. You have to have a neglected beard. You have to have... Your bonnet should be unbanded, you know, your hat should be crooked, your sleeve should be unbuttoned, your shoe should be untied, you should look very careless. Everything about you should demonstrate a careless desolation, and you don't look like that. You look very point device, I believe," she says. "You look very point device, which means everything is all in a row and orderly. You look very nice." So he agrees that he will do this. And at the end of scene three, he says, "With all my heart, good youth, I'll do this. I'll come and court you." "Nay," she says, "you must call me Rosalind. And come, sister, will you go?" Scene three, in the forest, Touchstone the Cloud, Audrey and Jacques behind them. And now Touchstone has been trying to court Audrey, who I believe is a milkmaid, and says he'll fetch her goats for you, and says, "Audrey, am I the man yet? Doth my simple feature content you?" And Audrey, "Your features, Lord, warrant us. What features?" You have to remember, Touchstone is dressed as a clown. Touchstone says, "I'm here with thee and thy goats, as the most capricious poet, honest Ovid, was among the Goths." Jacques says, as an aside, "Oh, knowledgeable, ill-inhabited, worse than Jove in a thatched house." And of course, Jove is the same as Zeus. It's like saying it's worse than trying to put God in a house. Because Touchstone is quoting Ovid. And if you remember, Ovid is the author who wrote The Metamorphosis, How All the Gods and Goddesses were Born. And Ovid also wrote one treatise that Ovid wrote. He was an early Roman from about the time of Christ, very shortly before or after. And Ovid wrote a small tract on how to entice and seduce married women. So for Touchstone to be talking about quoting Ovid does not say good things for the way he's trying to court Audrey, although he will marry her later. So he's trying to make her poetical. And poor Audrey, as the country bumpkin milkmaid, very simple, always portrayed on stage as very simple-minded, will reply, "I do not know what poetical is. Is it honest indeed in word? Is it a true thing?" Because she's a very honest, true person. And they're talking, Audrey will say, "Would you not have me honest?" And Touchstone will say, "No, truly, and thou, lest thou wert hard favored, for honesty coupled to beauty is to have honey a sauce to sugar." And so he is, he's trying to court Audrey in his own foolish way, And Touchstone will finally declare, "Well, praised be the gods for thy foulness. I will marry thee. And to that end, I have Sir Oliver Martex, the vicar of the next village, who has promised to meet me in this place of the forest and to couple us. He's going to marry them." And Audrey says, "Well, the gods give us joy." And so they get married, or they're going to get married. Enter Sir Oliver Martex, who is going to couple them. He is looking for someone to give the woman away, and Touchstone says, "I won't take her on the gift of any man." Sir Oliver says, "Truly, she must be given, or the marriage is not lawful." And Touchstone says, "Good even, good master, what do you call it? How do you, sir? You are very well met. God illed you for your last company. I'm very glad to see you. Even a toy in hand, sir. Nay, pray be covered." And Jacques says, "Will you be married, Motley?" Talking to Motley is talking to Touchstone. What Touchstone wears is called motley, the typical clown's outfit, the silly head with the four divisions of the hat, the very silly hat, the mismatched jacket and clothing. That is called motley. And Touchstone says, yes, he does want to be married. And so that's the end of that scene. Scene four. Back to the forest. We're still in Act 3, Scene 4. Still in the forest, in another part of the forest, we'll say. Enter Rosalind and Celia. Rosalind is inconsolable. She's crying. And Celia cannot console her. Why is she crying? She's crying because Orlando is late. Very upset that Orlando is late. And then they go to spy on Corin. I'm following through my book as I go. Please forgive me if I am messing up here a little bit. So they're looking who comes here, and it is Corin. Corin says, "Mistress and master," he's talking to Rosalind and Celia, "you have oft inquired after the shepherd that complained of love, who you saw sitting by me on the turf, praising the proud, disdainful shepherdess. That was his mistress." And Celia says, "Well, what about him? What of him?" And Corin says, "If you'll see a pageant truly played between the pale complexion of true love and the red glow of scorn and proud disdain, go hence a little and I'll conduct you, if you'll mark it." And Rosalind says, dressed as Ganymede, "Oh, come, let us remove. The sight of lovers feedeth those in love, because she's in love. So yes, she'll go and see the shepherd who is trying to court someone. Bring us to this sight, and you shall say, I'll prove a busy actor in their play." They exit. Now we have another part of the forest. This is scene 5. Act 3, scene 5. Enter Silvius and Phoebe. Silvius is terribly in love with Phoebe. Phoebe scorns him awful. Silvius, "Sweet Phoebe, do not scorn me. Do not, Phoebe. Say that you love me not, but say not so in bitterness. The common executioner, whose heart the accustomed sight of death makes hard, falls not the axe upon the humbled neck, but first begs pardon. Will you sterner be than he that dies and lives by bloody drops? In other words, you are more cruel than the executioner, who at least will say, excuse me, before he cuts off your head." Now in come Rosalind, Celia, and Corin, and they are spying on the shepherd and Phoebe. And Phoebe, who is terribly not in love with Silvius, replies, "I would not be thy executioner. I fly thee, for I would not injure thee. Thou tellest me there is murder in mine eye. 'Tis pretty sure and very probable that eyes, that are the frailest and softest things, who shut their coward gates on atomies, should be called tyrants, butchers, murderers. Now I do frown on thee with all my heart, and if mine eyes can wound, now let them kill thee. Now counterfeit to swoon. Okay, go ahead. Act like you're going to faint. Why, now fall down. Or if thou canst not, oh, for shame, for shame. Lie not to say mine eyes are murderers. Now show the wound mine eye hath made in thee." I'm stopping here to explain. The idea is that she's saying, you say I murder with my eyes? Well, die then. Oh, go ahead, swoon. Go ahead, fall down. So poor Silvius is begging her, probably on his knees, and she is being completely pitiless to him. And so he's begging, saying, please don't insult me. And Phoebe's saying, if I could insult you more, I would. Go ahead and finish out that scene, which finishes out this act. on to Act 4. In Act 4, Rosalind makes fun of the cynical Jacques. She coaches Orlando in the art of love. Phoebe is going to spot Rosalind dressed as Ganymede and fall in love with Ganymede. Orlando is going to find his brother Oliver asleep in the wood. Oliver has come to the woods. Oliver has been told by Duke Frederick that if he does not come up with his younger brother Orlando, who he believes has stolen his daughter Rosalind, that he'll take his property and kill him. And so Oliver has also come to the Forest of Arden looking for his brother, but he was asleep in the wood. And Orlando came upon his brother Oliver asleep in the wood, threatened by a snake and a lion. Typical Shakespeare. He rescues Oliver, and Oliver experiences a complete change of personality. It's a type of religious conversion. And Oliver now, the formerly evil Oliver, who now is converted, arrives at Rosalind's cottage with a bloody garment that belonged to Orlando and says, "I've come to you. Orlando sent me to tell you that he can't meet you here today. He was injured rescuing me, his brother," and shows her the bloody garment, and she faints. Now, when Oliver helps Rosalind to get up, you will after she faints, you'll have to read through some of those lines and see what you think. Does Oliver know that Rosalind Ganymede is actually a girl? Does he know? Critics argue on this. Rosalind faints, and Celia is still trying to cover, saying, "Oh, why, how now, Ganymede? Sweet Ganymede!" Oliver is trying to make excuses for Ganymede as a man, saying, "Many will swoon when they do look on blood." And Celia says, "Oh, there's more in it. Cousin Ganymede!" Oliver replies, "Look, he recovers." Rosalind, not realizing anyone's listening, says, "I would I were at home." Celia, "We'll lead you thither, I pray you. Will you take him by the arm?" Oliver, "Be of good cheer, youth. You a man? You lack a man's heart." Rosalind, "I do so, I confess it. Ah, sirrah, a body would think this was well counterfeited. I pray you, tell your brother how well I counterfeited. Hey-ho!" In other words, Rosalind says, "Be sure and tell your brother that even when I fainted, I counterfeited to be a girl. Be sure and tell him that, won't you?" Oliver replies, "This was not counterfeit. There is too great testimony in your complexion that it was a passion of earnest." Through these few lines, and depending on what a director does with this, you can have the director can have Oliver help Rosalind to her feet by grabbing her around her waist, noticing, "Oh my, this isn't the figure of a man." If you couple that with these lines, if you couple the action with the lines, you can see that it's very easy to do a production that shows at this point Oliver knows Rosalind is a woman. He may not know why, but he may know. And critics argue this one out. What happens in Act 5? Of course, it's time to clean up all the loose ends. It's time for everyone to fall in love with everybody else. We have to have a girl for everybody and a guy for everybody. And so what do you think happens? Oliver and Celia fall instantly in love and plan to marry instantly. Ganymede promises Orlando that he too will meet his love at the altar, ends up getting getting her father's consent, and appears as Rosalind. Rosalind is the one who forces all the action in the play. Rosalind is the character who makes everything happen. Rosalind is the one everyone is in love with. And in scene 2, this is Act 5, scene 2, Orlando and Oliver, the two brothers who had been hating one another, now are friends. Oliver has had some type of a conversion. Or in Orlando, they're talking. We meet them mid-topic. Orlando saying to his brother, "Is it possible that on so little acquaintance you should like her? That, but seeing, you should love her? And loving, woo? And wooing, she should grant? And will you persevere to enjoy her?" Which means you marry her and live with her forever. And Oliver replies, "Neither call the giddiness of it in question, the poverty of her, the small acquaintance, my sudden wooing, nor her sudden consenting, but say with me, I love Eliana," because that is the name that Celia has been going by, Eliana. "Say with her that she loves me. Consent with both that we may enjoy each other. It shall be to your good, for my father's house and all the revenue that was old Sir Roland's will I estate upon you, and here live and die a shepherd." So here's part of the ever happily ever after. Oliver says, "Don't worry, this is better for you, Orlando. If I marry Celia, this simple little shepherd, as he thinks she is, I'll live here in the forest forever. You can go back and have our father's money. I'll give you all the estate. This will be great. Don't worry." In comes Rosalind, and Orlando says, "You have my consent. Let your wedding be tomorrow. Hither will I invite the Duke and all his contented followers. Go you and prepare Eliana, for look you, here comes my Rosalind," again pretending that Ganymede is his Rosalind, because Rosalind's made it very clear that when he sees Ganymede, he's to pretend she's Rosalind. "Rosalind, God save you, brother, and Oliver, and you, fair sister." Now, this is one of those sets of lines where the director has all types of artistic license. If Oliver knows that Ganymede is really a girl, and he says, "and you, fair sister," it's one of those spots in Shakespeare that we have a double meaning. He says sister as though he's simply agreeing with the game that Oliver plays, and yet if he knows she's a girl, then that's why he says, "and you, fair sister." Rosalind replies, "Oh, my dear Orlando, how it grieves me to see thee wear thy heart in a scarf." Orlando says, "Oh, it's my arm." Rosalind, "I thought thy heart had been wounded with the claws of a lion." And Orlando said, "Wounded it is, but with the eyes of a lady." He's wounded with the eyes of Rosalind. Now we have to wonder, oh my goodness, has Oliver said something to Orlando? Is Orlando beginning to figure this out too? And we don't know. The director has lots of artistic license with this to play it either way, to say these lines innocently or to say these lines as though the men are figuring this out, but won't shame her by bringing it out publicly so that she has to be acknowledged while she's wearing these men's clothing, because apparently this is really difficult for her to be seen in the men's clothing. Rosalind, "Did your brother tell you how I counterfeited a swoon when he showed me your handkerchief?" And Orlando replies, "Aye, and greater wonders than that." Here's another line that may have a double meaning. Rosalind, "Oh, I know where you are. Nay, it's true. There was never anything so sudden but the flight of two rams and Caesar's thrasonical brag of I came, I saw, I overcome. For your brother and my sister no sooner met but they looked. No sooner looked but they loved. No sooner loved but they sighed. No sooner sighed but they asked one another the reason. No sooner knew the reason but they sought the remedy. And in these degrees have they made a pair of stairs to marriage, which they will climb incontinent or else be incontinent before marriage. So they need to marry. They are in the very wrath of love, and they will together. Clubs cannot part them." Orlando, "They shall be married tomorrow, and I will bid the Duke to the nuptial. But oh, how bitter a thing it is to look into happiness through another man's eyes. By so much the more shall I tomorrow be at the height of heart heaviness, by how much I shall think my brother happy and having what he wishes for." And Rosalind replies, "Why then, tomorrow I cannot serve your turn for Rosalind?" And Orlando, tired of playing a game, says, "I can no longer live by thinking." Rosalind, "I will weary you then no longer with idle talking. Know of me then, for now I speak to some purpose, that I know you are a gentleman of good conceit. I speak not this that you should bear a good opinion of my knowledge, insomuch I say I know you are. Neither do I labor for a greater esteem than may in some little measure draw a belief from you, to do yourself good and not to grace me. Believe then, if you please, that I can do strange things. I have, since I was 3 years old, conversed with a magician, most profound in his art and yet not damnable. If you do love Rosalind so near the heart as your gesture cries it out, when your brother marries Eliana, shall you marry her? I know into what straits of fortune she is driven. It is not impossible to me, if it not appear not inconvenient to you, to set her before your eyes tomorrow, human as she is, and without any danger. Orlando, speakest thou in sober meanings? Rosalind, by my life I do, which I tender dearly, though I say I am a magician. Therefore, put you in your best array, bid your friends, for if you will be married tomorrow, you shall, and to Rosalind, if you will. And in come Silvius and Phoebe. Remember, Silvius loves Phoebe, Phoebe scorns Silvius, and Phoebe thinks she loves Ganymede. Look, here comes a lover of mine and a lover of hers. And in comes Phoebe. Oh, youth, you've done me much ungentleness to show the letter that I writ you. If you've read the play, you know all about the letter. Rosalind, I care not if I have. It is my study to seem despiteful and ungentle to you. You are there followed by a faithful shepherd. Look upon him. Love him. He worships you. Phoebe, good shepherd, tell this youth what it is to love. And Silvius, who knows what it is to love, says, it is to be made all of sighs and tears, and so I am for Phoebe. And Phoebe replies, and I for Ganymede. And Orlando, and I for Rosalind. Rosalind, and I for no woman. Silvius, it is to be made all of faith and service, and so am I for Phoebe. Phoebe, and I for Ganymede. And Orlando, and I for Rosalind. Rosalind, and I for no woman. Silvius, it is to be made all made of fantasy, all made of passion, and all made of wishes, all adoration, duty, and observance, all humbleness, all patience, and impatience, all purity, all trial, all obedience. And so am I for Phoebe. Phoebe, and so am I for Ganymede. Orlando, and so am I for Rosalind. Rosalind, and so am I for no woman. Phoebe, to Rosalind, if this be so, why blame you me to love you? Silvius, to Phoebe, if this be so, why blame you me to love you? Orlando, if this be so, why blame you me to love you? Rosalind, why do you speak to why blame you me to love you? Orlando, to her that is not here, nor doth not hear. This is one of those occasions that may be the double meaning, for Orlando to turn to Ganymede and say, if this be so, why blame you me to love you? If he knows she's a girl, it makes sense. If he thinks she's a boy, it doesn't quite make sense. But he says, it's to her that is not here, nor doth not hear. Rosalind, pray you no more of this. 'Tis like the howling of Irish wolves against the moon. Then Rosalind is now going to clean everything up. She says to Silvius, I will help you if I can. She says to Phoebe, I would love you if I could. Tomorrow, meet me all together. She says to Phoebe, I will marry you if ever I marry woman, and I'll be married tomorrow. She says to Orlando, I will satisfy you if ever I satisfied man, and you shall be married tomorrow. She says to Silvius, I will content you if what pleases you contents you, and you shall be married tomorrow. And she says to Orlando, as you love Rosalind, meet. She says to Silvius, as you love Phoebe, meet. And as I love no woman, I'll meet. So fare you well. I have left you commands. And Silvius, I'll not fail if I live. Phoebe, nor I, Orlando, nor I. And now we go to scene 3. Now we have Touchstone the Cloud and Audrey. And let's see, Touchstone the Clown. Scene 4, it's a very simple, quick scene. Scene 4, the Duke, Jacques, Orlando, Oliver, Celia, and they're all getting together saying, oh my goodness, can that boy Ganymede really do what he has promised to do? Can he do it? And sure enough he can. As you read the rest of the play, I believe that the rest of the pieces will fall into place. Duke Frederick even arrives in the Forest of Arden. He has come with the intention of killing all of his enemies. He also has a religious experience. He meets a hermit who brings about a miraculous religious conversion. And so, of course, he's going to turn the dukedom back over to Duke Senior, and he is going to take up the life of a recluse in the forest, kind of like a hermit. And the melancholy Jacques is going to follow him in that and be somewhat of a, follow some type of a monk-type existence. And of course there will be a dance and the weddings at the end. And the epilogue, in a very unusual fashion, is done by Rosalind, who is a lady. And it's a great epilogue. Enjoy this play.